Hello, this is Birdie, and I will be reading today from the commercial news dated January 24th, 2020. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, A Gift to Generations, Golf Tournament Donates Trees to Legion. Danville, the grounds on the American Legion Post 2010 will look a little greener this spring, thanks to donations from the American Legion State Golf Tournament. About 80 trees and shrubs have been planted around the Legion in Jackson and Prospect. Greg Alpers, coordinator of the golf tournament, helped plant the trees late last year, along with Kent Griffin, Legion commander, Dave Morse, and Dr. Thomas Holleran. Albers said Holleran, who is his primary physician, mentioned one day that he was involved in the Trees for Danville project and noticed there were no trees on the Legion property. Trees for Danville's goal is to plant trees in different areas of town where they are needed, such as neighborhoods, around schools and businesses, and in vacant lots. That sparked an idea with Albers, and he approached the Legion board which thought it would be a good idea to plant trees. The golf tournament board agreed. The board had been looking for a project to honor Post 210, which has served as host for the tournament since 2015. The tournament is played each August at Harrison Park Golf Course and Turtle Run Golf Club, with proceeds going to support veteran charities. The golf committee is pleased to do something for the host, Alpers said. Thought it was a nice way to express our appreciation. The cost to buy the trees was about $500. Sons of the American Legion member Randy Holman donated $100. The trees, maple, oak, spruce, and others, and shrubs were planted on the south side of the property near the area where discarded flags were retired and also around the t-ball field. I hope I'm around to see some of them grow, Albers said jokingly. Plaques will be erected, noting that the golf committee was responsible for the trees. All my life, I've been interested in trees in a variety of ways, said Holleran, founder of the nonprofit Trees for Danville, and a physician with Carl Christmas Trees, were grown at his childhood home in upstate New York. He's maintained that interest over the years, saying the trees of Danville are lovely, but they haven't been replenished. I've taken it as my mission to replenish the trees. Holleran has planted a couple of hundred trees at Winter Park and 50 to 60 at Northeast School's track and fitness stations, as well as many other places. He also planted 18 scarlet oaks at Carl on Fairchild in memory of Dr. J. Yambert, a Carl physician who died during a hiking accident in 2018 in Colorado. In the next year or two, he'd like to plant trees around the new casino and on the streets leading to the new Carl campus in West Danville. People form an opinion of your town when getting off the interstate, he said. Also, there are benefits to living in a tree-filled neighborhood. The shade reduces heating and cooling bills, real estate values are higher, air is cleaner, and there is less pollution, Holleran said, citing just a few of the benefits. Under the direction of City Parks Director Steve Lane, a tree census was done about a year ago to determine the number of locations and types of trees. Diversity is important, Holleran said, so disease doesn't take out a lot of trees at once. The new trees at the Legion will provide shade when families watch their children on the ball fields. Albers is chairman of the golf committee, which also includes Stephanie and Alan Wilson, Dave Westner, Dave DeJager, Sean Paisley, Greg Barnett, Jeannie Cook, and their staff, Rhonda Ellis and Phil Yocums, with the Danville Area Convention and Visitors Bureau, and Christy Rich and Joy Wilson, both with the Department of Illinois American Legion. They do a tremendous job, and all are dedicated to the cause, Albers said. Albers served with the Marines from 1966 to 72 and is past commander of Post 210. Three men found dead in house. Police investigate discovery as homicides. Staff report. Danville. Danville police are investigating a possible triple homicide Thursday afternoon. Officers responded at 11 a.m. to an address in the 400 block of Elm Street for a report of subjects down inside a residence. Upon arrival, police located three males ranging in age from 60 to 67 years old, deceased inside the residence, according to a press release issued by the Danville Police Department. Vermilion County Coroner Jane McFadden identified the three victims, all from Danville, as Nathaniel N. Gentry, 65, Anthony D. Jones, 60, and Cordell J. Reed, Sr., 67. The investigation is in the early stages and is being treated as a homicide investigation, a release from Police Commander Joshua Webb stated. The investigation into this incident continues. Anyone with information regarding this incident is asked to call Danville Police at 217-431-2250 or Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 217-446-TIPS. Danville recorded 7 homicides during 2019. DHS Show Choirs to Preview Performances by Carol Roman. Danville. The Danville High School Choral Boosters will present Prima Vista next week, a virtual spaghetti dinner and first look at the DHS Show Choirs competition performances. The doors open at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday at Danville High School's Dick Van Dyke Auditorium, with the performance beginning at 7 p.m. The event is open to the public. It's free to the public. We're not charging admission, but we are accepting food donations for the St. James Food Pantry, DHS Choral Director Jeff Thomas said. It will be a great community event, Sean Owen, president of the DHS Choral Boosters, said. We encourage the public to come out and support the show, choirs, and District 118. The idea for a virtual spaghetti dinner was hatched several years ago. The audience won't be actually eating a spaghetti dinner, but rather donating the food to help others. The spaghetti sauce, pasta, and canned foods will be collected inside the high school's main doors at the Circle Drive to help restock the community food pantry at St. James United Methodist Church. The Prima Vista will give the community a sneak preview at the performances the DHS show choirs have been working on before they present them at competition. This will be a preview night for all three show choirs, Thomas said. They will be competing in a couple of Indianapolis competitions and 3 or 4 Illinois competitions this year, he said. It will give families more of an opportunity to see their kids perform. The DHS show choirs, contemporaries, the executives, and delegations will perform full shows. The all-female contemporaries will perform a cool theme show similar to Coraline and Alice in Wonderland, Thomas said. The executives, an all-male show choir group, will perform a really fun Jurassic Park theme show. There will be an inflatable T-Rex at the end, he said. How can you not have a T-Rex in the show? The mixed voice group delegation show, Screen Time, is a cautionary tale about the trials and issues of being addicted to technology, Thomas said. The performance is a reminder to put down the cell phones and live in the moment and make meaningful relationships, he said. Thomas's wife, Cassie, a kindergarten teacher at Northeast Elementary School, designed the show choir costumes and choreographed the contemporaries' performance. She recently became director of the Southview Upper Elementary School's Green Machine Show that boasts 45 students. Election Board Fixes Number of Non-Citizens Who Voted by Peter Hancock, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. Only 15 people who self-identified as not being U.S. citizens cast ballots in the 2018 and 2019 elections in Illinois, the Illinois State Board of Elections said in a correction Thursday, three of whom actually turned out to be citizens.
Spokesman Matt Dietrich had initially reported that 16 possible non-students had voted. In a clarification Thursday, he said one of the voters had voted in two different elections and was inadvertently counted as two votes. The people were able to vote due to a recently discovered programming error in Illinois' new automatic voter registration system that automatically signs people up to vote when they apply for or renew their driver's license. Officials in Secretary of State Jesse White's office, which manages driver's license, have accepted responsibility for the error and say the problem was immediately fixed. That system, the result of a 2017 legislation that passed both chambers of the General Assembly by unanimous bipartisan votes, officially launched in July 2018. But the programming glitch that failed to filter the outcome who identified themselves as non-citizens wasn't discovered until December 2019. By that time, 545 people who identified as being non-citizens were registered to vote. The election board has said consistently that some of those individuals may actually be citizens who accidentally checked the wrong box on their driver's license application. We continue to work with the local election authorities to establish the voting eligibility status of the remaining individuals who voted, and of the 545 individuals who were mistakenly registered during the AVR process, Dietrich said in a statement Thursday. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle are now calling the legislative hearings to determine how the mistake happened and what is being done to make sure it is not repeated. Representative Emmanuel Chris Welch of Hillside Democrat, who chairs the House Executive Committee, said he will hold hearings next week. Lawmakers will be back in Springfield on Tuesday, January 28th, for the start of the 2020 legislative session. Coalition pushes for clean energy by Jerry Nowicki, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. With federal regulatory changes looming and legislatures 1 week away from return to the Capitol, some clean energy advocates are looking to jumpstart a stalled proposal to bring major reform to the state's energy landscape. Members of the Illinois Clean Jobs Coalition, including the legislative sponsors of the Clean Energy Jobs Act, or CEJA, spoke Tuesday of the James R. Thompson Center in Chicago. They said the issue is urgent because of the ongoing effects of climate change and a recent ruling by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC. The Clean Energy Jobs Act will make the state a national leader in securing clean, affordable energy for all consumers in the state, said Senator Christina Castro, CEJA Senate sponsor. Climate change is an emergency, and we can't ignore, and the Trump administration is doing everything it can to bail out fossil fuel power plants and force Illinois to take a giant step backward from achieving 100% renewable energy. Illinois is part of the federally regulated PJM's grid, which purchases capacity from electrical generators on behalf of all or portions of 13 states and Washington, D.C. at an auction every year. Capacity procurement is not the purchase of actual energy, but the guarantee that the generator will be able to supply a certain amount of energy at any time, especially during the grid's highest usage times over a specified period of time. Customers pay for these capacity costs through the supply charge on their electricity bill. On December 19th, FERC voted 2-1 to change the PJM's rules regarding the minimum offer price and generator can bid, noting in a news release, the action was taken to address the impact of state subsidies on the wholesale capacity market. In a news release, FERC said it levels the playing field for all energy generators, but advocates claim it will force Illinois customers to pay extra for electricity generated by coal and other daily sources of power that aren't needed to serve local demand. The Clean Energy Jobs Coalition. The FERC ruling was structured specifically to penalize states such as Illinois that have cost-saving investments in energy-efficient and renewable sources of power. CUB supports CEJA because it's the only energy bill in Springfield that offers a blueprint for protecting our pocketbooks while helping Illinois achieve 100% clean energy to protect our planet. Coletta noted Tuesday the next capacity auction is likely to take place by December, so he said it is imperative to pass CEJE by the end of this legislative session, which will run through January through May. And now we'll do the obituaries. Patricia Lape, Covington, Indiana. Mrs. Patricia Ann Pat Lape died peacefully at home on Thursday, January 23, 2020, in Covington, Indiana, at the age of 93. A funeral is scheduled for her at 10:30 a.m. Monday, January 27th, at Shelby Funeral Home, 622 3rd Street, Covington, Indiana, with burial at Lower Mound Cemetery immediately afterward. Visitation will be from 2 to 4 p.m. Sunday, January 26th, at the funeral home. Pastor Christina Bennett will officiate. Ruth Leahy, Danville. Ruth Ellen Leahy, 56, Danville, passed away at 8:07 a.m. Friday, January 17th, 2020, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. A celebration of life will be held on Tuesday, January 28th, 2020, at 10 a.m. at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, 3940 North Vermilion Street, Danville, Illinois. Miles Clark will officiate. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park. Visitation will be held Monday, January 27th, 2020, from 4 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Doris G. Jenkins, Maitland, Florida. Doris G. Jenkins, 96, of Maitland, formerly of Cayuga, Indiana, passed away at noon, Friday, January 17th, at Savannah Grove of Maitland in Maitland, Florida. Funeral services will be at 2 p.m. Saturday, January 25th, at Deverter Funeral Home in Cayuga. Officiating, Reverend Brian Bartlett. Burial with honors, Thomas Cemetery in Newport, Indiana. Visitation, noon, Saturday, January 25th, until the time of services at the funeral home. Thomas M. Cook. Thomas M. Cook, 87, of West Lafayette, Indiana, passed away at 2:49 p.m., Monday, January 21st, 2020, at Indiana University Arnett Hospital, Lafayette. Friends may call from 9 a.m. until the time of funeral service at 11 a.m., Saturday, January 25th, at the Indiana Veterans Home Auditorium in MacArthur Hall. Chaplain David Heff to officiate. Interment with military rites to follow at the Indiana Veterans Home Cemetery. John Ritter. John Harvey Ritter, 72, of Danville, passed away Friday, January 17th, 2020, in Liberty House at the VA Ileana Health Center of Danville. Visitation will be 2 to 3 p.m. Saturday, January 25th, in Shelby Funeral Home of Covington, Indiana. The funeral will follow at 3 p.m. at the funeral home with Pastor J. Sorrell officiating. Burial will be in Songer Cemetery with military graveside rites by American Legion Post 210 of Danville. James E. Stafford, Danville. James E. Stafford, 69, of Danville, died at 2:04 a.m. Thursday, January 23, 2020, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Leek and Sons Funeral Home, 304 East Williams, Danville. Jordan Valdez Parrish, Danville. Jordan Valdez Parrish, 29, of Danville, died at 9:09 p.m. Sunday, January 19, 2020, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center, Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Leek & Sons Funeral Home, 304 East Williams Street, Danville. Dems continue impeachment case. Associated Press, Washington. Democratic House prosecutors argued in President Donald Trump's impeachment trial Thursday that he was swept up by a completely bogus Ukraine theory pushed by attorney Rudy Giuliani that led to his abuse of presidential power and then impeachment. As the Democrats pressed their case for a second day before skeptical Republican Senate jurors, they displayed video images of the nation's top FBI and Homeland Security officials warning the public of the theory that it was Ukraine, not Russia, that interfered with the 2016 election. It was just one of 10 separate ways the prosecutors argued that Trump abused power for his own personal political benefits ahead of the 2020 election. The first article of impeachment against him. That's what Donald Trump wanted investigated or announced. This completely bogus criminal pushed conspiracy theory, said Representative Adam Schiff, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, who is leading the prosecution. Trump is accused of seeking the investigation that probes a political foe, Joe Biden, and Biden's son, while holding back congressionally approved military aid as leverage. Schiff said, "You can imagine what a danger that presents to this country." Trump is facing trial in the Senate after the House impeached him last month, accusing him of abusing his powers by asking Ukraine for the investigation while withholding the aid from a U.S. ally at war with bordering Russia. The second article of an impeachment accuses him of obstructing Congress by refusing to turn over documents or allow officials to testify in the House probe. Republicans, growing tired of the long hours of proceedings, have defended Trump's actions as appropriate and cast the process as a politically motivated effort to weaken him in the midst of his re-election campaign. Republicans hold a 53-47 majority in the Senate, and acquittal is considered likely. The Democrats' challenge is clear as they try to convince not just fidgety senators, but an American public divided over the Republican president in an election year. With Chief Justice John Roberts presiding, Democrats argue on Thursday that Trump's motives were apparent. No president has ever used his office to compel a foreign nation to help him cheat in our elections, Representative Jared Nader of New York, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, told the senators. He said the nation's founders would be shocked. The president's conduct is wrong. It's illegal. It's dangerous. They scoffed at Trump's claim that he had good reasons for pressuring Ukraine to investigate his political foes. It was Trump who engaged in a shocking abuse of power, not former Vice President Biden or other Trump foes, said Representative Sylvia Garcia of Texas. There is no evidence, nothing, nada, to suggest that Biden did anything improper in dealing with Ukraine, said the former judge. Trump, with Giuliani, pursued investigations of Biden and his son, Hunter, who served on Ukraine's gas company board, and sought the probe of debunking theories of what nation was guilty of evidence in the 2016 election. On dual tracks, Democrats prosecuted their case while answering in advance the arguments expected from the president's attorney in the days ahead. At one point, they showed a video of younger Lindsey Graham, then a South Carolina congressman, and now a GOP senator aligned with Trump, arguing during Bill Clinton's 1999 impeachment that no crime was needed for impeaching a president. Trump's defense team is now arguing that the impeachment articles against the president were invalid because they do not allege he committed a specific crime. The president's defenders waited their turn, which may come Saturday. We will be putting on a vigorous defense in both facts, rebutting what they said the Constitution, and the Constitution, said Attorney Jay Sekulow. Ahead of the day's proceedings, Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri said the Democrats were putting forward admirable presentations, but he said they basically got 1 hour of presentation and they have six times on Tuesday and eight times yesterday. There's just not much new here. The top Senate Democrat, Chuck Schumer, acknowledged that many senators really don't want to be here. But Schumer said Schiff has been outlining a compelling case, and many Republicans are hearing it for only the first time. He contended they can't help but be glued to his testimony. One reluctant to take on impeachment during an election year, Democrats are now marching toward a decision by the Senate that the American public will also judge. Trump blasted the proceedings on Thursday morning and tweeted, declaring them the most unfair and corrupt hearing in congressional history. Each side has set 3 days to present its case. After the House prosecutors finish, likely today, the president's lawyers will have as long as 24 hours. Troop surge in Middle East may not end soon, Associated Press. Aboard the USS Bataan, during the past 8 months, the United States has poured more than 20,000 additional troops into the Middle East to counter the escalating threat from Iran that peaked with the recent missile attack on American forces in Iraq. Despite President Donald Trump's pledge to bring troops home, the top U.S. commander in the Middle East on Thursday said the most recent forces to enter the region could be there for quite a while. "You're here because I requested that you come," Marine General Frank McKenzie told sailors and Marines aboard the USS Bataan amphibious assault ship, his voice booming over the ship's loudspeaker. "I'm not sure how long you're going to stay in the theater. We'll work that out as we go ahead. Could be a while, could be less than that. Just don't know right now." The Bataan and two other USS warships moved into the Middle East on January 11th. By Thursday, they were in the North Red Sea, roughly 50 miles south of the Sinai Peninsula. They are the latest additions to the American troop presence in the region. Since May, their members have grown from about 60,000 to more than 80,000. Those increased deployments came despite two significant hurdles: Trump's persistent pledge to end the wars and bring troops home, and U.S. Defense Secretary Mark Esper's insistence that U.S. forces be shifted from the Asian Pacific to the bulwark against threats from China. In making its case for troops in the Middle East, the U.S. military points to Iran's January 8th launch of as many as two dozen ballistic missiles at two Iraqi bases where the U.S. troops were stationed. The attack was in retaliation for U.S. drone strikes that killed Qassem Soleimani, Iran's top general. The U.S. also moved an aircraft carrier into the region last year. It has left and was replaced with the USS Harry S. Truman. The Pentagon has sent additional fighter jets, bomber aircraft, and Patriot missile batteries into the Middle East to provide additional security for U.S. troops and allies. This is Birdie signing off from the commercial news for January 24th. I hope you have a great rest of your day.